This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Back in on the drive. Carrington here, Fanning here, Spector back in studio. Today's pop quiz was the movie Clueless. The winner got a $25 gift card to Pepper Jack's Grill. Without further ado, I don't want to waste the man's time. He's a busy man. He is the general manager of your Kansas City Royals, joining us live at the Urban Youth Academy. Dave Moore here with us today. How are you doing today,
sir? Great, guys. What's going on?
You like the commissioner of this whole wiffle ball situation
I'm
out
not
here?
The commissioner. I want as least responsibility as
really?
Possible.
We were thinking about batting you cleanup on Fesco's Fiasco. What do you think?
There you go.
All right.
Well, you know, I grew up playing wiffle ball, probably like each and every one of you. So.
Yeah, absolutely. We would cut the cover off a baseball and take all the yarn out of it and then put it back in there and sew it back up with like upholstery thread. And then with our wiffle ball bats, we'd cut the top off and put like a golf shaft in there and stuff it with newspaper.
My goodness.
We could throw more junk with the ball and you could hit it farther,
say,
too.
You guys were analytics before there was.
Yeah, we were going crazy. You only got two strikes, though, and you didn't have to run. Those were our rules. But I think everybody had different rules for wiffle ball,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's true. No, it's good. No, this is a great event, and you know, we're really looking forward to it. You know, last year was our inaugural event. We had one day at Joe Ungashek's house. He turns his front yard into a wiffle ball stadium, if you will.
Yeah.
It's really neat.
Yeah.
And you know, this year we're going to do 3 days and 2 days here at the Urban Youth Academy. We have a lot of different things going on, and certainly Saturday morning we will, you know, conclude at Joe's front yard again.
Nice. I'm sure his wife's on board with that then, right? If you're going to tear up the front yard and play wiffle ball out there.
It's a community event. I know Joe makes it available to, you know, the entire neighborhood throughout the year.
Oh, that's great.
It's kind of neat.
Right now we're talking to the Royals general manager, Dayton Moore. Dayton, this is like a really weird introspective question. Not many people think about themselves in this context of. You've accomplished and done a lot of great things over your career and in Kansas City. Where would you rank the accomplishment of this building that you have this dream, you came up with the blueprint for, you worked with a lot of people together, and now to sit and overlook part of, I mean, you were a big part of why this was built. How would you rank this among the accomplishments that you've had in your time in Kansas City?
Well, first of all, it's we and it's us. I mean, it's our entire community, you know, coming together and supporting, you know, this academy. You know, the truth of the matter is, you know, our C in the Major Leagues Foundation, we had put together a proposal to have a baseball academy where we would come alongside of young boys and young girls and just try to grow the game in our own small way. And it was actually the summer, July of 2014 when I was at the Urban Youth Academy in Compton, California, ran into Daryl Miller. We start talking about the possibility of having an Urban Youth Academy in Kansas City. It's something that we'd talked about here with our front office. But at the time, there was a transition period that was occurring in Major League Baseball's front office. Commissioner Selig was stepping aside. Commissioner Manfred was on the horizon there. And they were really reevaluating the usefulness of these academies. And so we pushed, we made our proposal, we went to New York, we pushed a little bit more, and we talked about the importance of having a facility right here in the heart of our country, next to the Negro Leagues Museum. We know what an important part of this area is to Kansas City, the 18th and Vine District, and so it was just a great match. And of course, Mayor James jumped on board right away. And without him really being the one that said, let's get this thing done. And, of course, Mr. Glass was very supportive as well. So, again, it's a collection of a lot of people doing some great work. Kyle Venna in our front office has really kind of spearheaded a lot of the day-to-day operations and making sure that, you know, this is possible. But Carolyn Watley, who, you know, headed up our fundraising committee, she did an amazing job, but, you know, we couldn't do it without the great support of the people of Kansas City And it's an amazing place. It's going to continue to grow. We've got so many different things planned. You know, this fall, you know, this summer was a success. We've got after school programs and going to be able to come alongside a lot of boys, a lot of girls, a lot of young people, a lot of families in this area. But the bigger vision, the greater vision, is to how can we bridge the gap, the divide that exists between the urban, the suburban, and rural parts of Kansas City. We want to use baseball and softball as a way to unite young people, different backgrounds, different races, different education backgrounds, you know, the whole gamut, and just bring people together through the game of baseball and softball.
So we're talking to Royals general manager Dayton Moore. I mean, you know, I think people identify you with the general manager of the Kansas City Royals, but you got a lot more on your plate than just trying to figure out who's going and who's staying at the trade deadline, right?
Well, you know what? It's all encompassing. Look, yeah. if you, again, the spirit of our entire front office from the time we came here to Kansas City was, yes, put a great product on the field, do our best to put the best team we can on the field each and every night, but we also want to make sure that young people get a chance to enjoy this game, and we want to continue to grow the game. And when I spoke to our team October 16th in 2014, after we had just swept the Baltimore Orioles, and I told our team, and I congratulated them on, yes, going to the World Series, first time in 29 years the Royals are back to the World Series. That's great. But what we're most proud of is the fact that you all understood, you players understood, that players had came along before you. You understood that there was a successful model here in Kansas City, and you committed to that model, and you've now grown the game in Kansas City, and you've ensured that other players are going to get the opportunity to follow what you've accomplished. And so that's what it's about. We're just trying to make something better.
Dayton, on the show over the last couple of days, just because of the All-Star break, we've been kind of celebrating the accomplishments of the 2014 and 2015 Royals by playing classic innings from the run. I'm going to be a little bit selfish here. My favorite half inning that we played so far was the inning in Game 4 of the ALDS against the Houston Astros. Just, if there was a 20-minute stretch you can show anybody and say, yeah, this was the Royals during that run, that would be the inning. I don't think I've ever heard you tell the story of where you were when you watched it, the emotions you felt heading into the inning, and just the gambit of emotions of then seeing how that inning transpired. I believe it was top of the eighth in Houston, where Carlos Correa had the air.
You know, actually, I was down in the clubhouse, you know, watching the game, and, you know, our players actually were back and forth as well, and a lot of times you get the players will gravitate towards, you know, in the clubhouse to watch the game on TV. They can see pitch location, etc. And so, you know, we were down in the clubhouse, and you know, we could really feel the momentum, you know, when, especially when Drew Butera had that at bat.
It was a hell of an at bat, wasn't it? That
walk,
it really
was. And so he had that at bat. I mean, we could just feel the momentum, and we knew as a group that we were going to win that baseball game, you know, when that happened.
I mean, I get goosebumps even thinking about it. I mean, I was there dating in Houston for that game.
Yeah.
And it was phenomenal. What is your favorite inning or half inning of that run in 14 or 2015? Because we've played a bunch of them over the last couple of days. We're going to play some more today.
You know, Brad, I don't reflect a whole lot on it, I can tell you. I mean, I remember in 2014 the last play with Holly on the mound you know, the ground ball to Moustakas, and, you know, we 5-3 closed that game out, and we were going to the World Series. And I remember standing in the tunnel and you know, with Mr. Glass and Kevin Ulick, and Dan was down there as well, and just watching our players celebrate. I mean, that was an amazing time. But, you know, I don't reflect a whole lot on it. I mean, I don't wear rings. I don't think about it on a continuous basis, because we've got so much work to do each and every day. We have a greater vision for this team and this franchise as we move forward. We're as motivated as we've ever been. And, you know, we had a conference call 2 weeks ago now. And I talked to everybody in our organization, from the Dominican Summer League all the way up to the Major League team, all of the support staff, the medical people, the clubhouse people. And what I simply said to them, I said, look, we're never going to forget, or nobody can ever take away, the attendance that we have drawn, the television ratings, the fact that from 2011 to 2017, we had more Gold Glove winners than anybody in baseball, small market team. more All-Stars from 2013 to 2017 than anybody in baseball. And the fact that we were the first small market team in this modern era to win a World Series and go back-to-back. And so that is forever cemented in Royals history. However, we need to simply use that as a platform and springboard on to do something much better. I mean, if I, as we sit here today and how this team has performed, I mean, we're a little disgusted, truthfully, and very disappointed. Disappointed primarily because of our fans. And, you know, that's my heart, you know, for what we're trying to do. It's hurtful to me that our fans aren't enjoying winning baseball. So what do? Well, we go to work and we simply try to do it better. And I understand that most people in the game today will tell you that a small market team is going to go through these types of setbacks, and you're going to go through a window where you're going to win, and then you're going to take 4 or 5 years and lose the way Houston did, where I think they averaged 106 losses over a four-year period or whatever it was, and then finally they were 500, and then we played them, of course, and then they had a setback, and then they went to the World Series. And most people say that's how you have to do it now. But we're not going to buy into that. I mean, we're going to build this thing once and for all, and then expect to be successful over a 10-15 year period. Not that we'll go to the World Series every year, not that we'll even be in the playoffs every year, but we want to have a chance to win every single year for a 10-15 year period. Again, people say you can't do that in a small market. We're going to work towards that. The next 3-4 years, I understand, you know, they may be a little more challenging, a little tougher. They're going to test our character. They're going to test our will. They're going to test our patience. They're going to test us in a lot of ways. But those are going to be tests that we're going to pass, and we're going to do well at. And then we're going to build this thing the way we want it for a long period of time.
Right now, we're talking to the general manager of the Royals, Dayton Moore. He's joining us live at the Urban Youth Academy. He's going to hold with us through the break. On the other side, I want to talk to you about what Rob Manfred had to say about Mike Trout, about the Manny Machado trade, and we got to talk about it. Your team is going to have a lot of very important decisions to come up in the next 2 weeks. Right now, we're talking to the general manager of the Royals, Dayton Moore, live on The Drive. Right now, we're talking to the Royals general manager, Dayton Moore. He is live with us at the Urban Youth Academy. We got a lot to get into. I just saw this. It broke during our conversation with them in the first part of it. Royals minor league outfielder Bubba Starling will be sidelined approximately 6 weeks after suffering a dislocated left index finger injury. The injury occurred off the field during a visit home last week. Dayton, I don't think you can give us all the tea about the issue.
Well, I'm still trying to find out the details as well. You know, I know it's been unfortunate. You know, Bubba obviously expecting big things out of him, certainly this year, and you know, he had the oblique issue and was doing really, really well. In fact, I spoke to Austin Driggers, who our sports science director, about 10 days ago, and he was just so pleased with how he was coming along, and just kind of an unfortunate, you know, circumstance. Hopefully he'll get back before the year's out and can go play winter ball and see what happens, but it's been a tough go.
Now it ruins our burrito bet too, because I had a bet that Bubba was going to be up in September, and I thought coming off the oblique injury and coming back, C-Dot and I had a little bet going. He thought maybe it was Tim Tebow. I'm going with Bubba. I think Bubba's going to be here in September. But how much does that bug you when it's an off the field thing versus something that happens? It's got to drive you crazy.
It really
as a champ,
does. You know, it does. When things happen off the field, whether it be, you know, in this case, you know, in home or with Salvador Perez, you know, as the season began and he's carrying luggage up the stairs, or a player gets hurt in the weight room. Yeah. I mean, you want him, if they're going to get hurt, you want him to get hurt on the field.
Right now, we're talking to the general manager of the Royals, Dayton Moore, for a few more minutes. Dayton, I want to ask you, there's a lot going on in baseball during the All-Star break. It's been a very busy last couple of days. This is what the Major League Baseball Commissioner, Rob Manfred, had to say about Mike Trout. Mike is a great, great player and a really nice person, but he's made certain decisions with what he wants to do and what he doesn't want to do, and how he wants to spend his free time and how he doesn't want to spend his free time. That's up to him. If he wants to engage and be more active in that area, I think we could help him make his brand really, really big. But he has to make a decision that he's prepared to engage in that area. It takes time and effort. The Angels then fire back and defend their players. I think most organizations will do. I think baseball has become such a not niche sport, but such a localized sport, and nationally maybe it's not as big as it was. How do you think we help baseball grow to this national level where somebody who like Mike Trout, who is a once-in-a-generational kind of player, he is the proper star the way he should be on the level of Odell Beckham, the way of James Harden, LeBron, those kind of stars. How do we get Mike Trout to that level?
Well, I mean, first, I'm not completely familiar with the situation or the context and of Commissioner Manfred, who I respect greatly and I think is doing amazing things for our game and trying to grow our game, continue to make it strong with, One Baseball, the Play Ball initiative that he's doing. He's been a big part of, without him and his pushing, I mean, this academy where we're sitting here right now today simply does not happen. But I think it all comes back to this. I mean, I really do. I think it comes back to having players that connect with fans. And, I look at Salvador Perez. Salvador Perez has personality. He loves to play. He enjoys interacting with the fans, as does Mike Moustakas, Eric Hosmer, Lorenzo Cain, players we've had here in the past or current players. I mean, they have to be the ones that drive it in their own community. And when you connect with the fans, then the fans want to know your story. And that's how baseball is. I mean, it's a long season, 162 games, as we all know. And that's the very best way to do it. When the umpire says play ball, you go out there and give your best effort. You play with passion. So people are watching and they say, you know what, this looks like playing baseball looks like a lot of fun. And then that player, again, spends time in the community, does interviews, helps with charities, comes alongside of young people and just helps them with life. I mean, I think that's how you grow the game. I mean, and I guess you can market it all you want and put it on YouTube and and what have you, but it's such an ESPN generation, as we know. Kids just look at the highlights now, and they don't necessarily sit down and watch an entire game. But at the end of the day, people may not understand what you say or remember what you say, but they always remember how you make them feel. And so if you want to grow the game, you got to make the fans feel like they're a part of the game.
Talking to Dayton Moore, Royals general manager. We're down here at the Urban Youth Academy. I thought Carrington made a really good point when we were having this conversation about Mike Trout and the commissioner yesterday. And what is it, about a third of Major League Baseball now is international or Latin players? Is that about right?
Probably so, yeah.
I wonder how much that plays into it, because I know just from a media standpoint, if you don't speak Spanish, it's tough to communicate with some of the players. And in defense of the players, you know, a lot of those guys are hesitant to say anything in English because they don't want it to be taken the wrong way.
Right.
Do you think that holds back some of the stars
it
from
could.
Being out
you know,
there?
That's an interesting point. You know, Brad, one of the things that I've always loved so much about baseball is the diversity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the different backgrounds, the players that come from different countries and, as I said, different ethnic backgrounds. And I love the diversity. I find that fascinating. And the strength of a team ultimately is because of its diversity and players wanting to know where each other came from and wants to know their story. And so I think we've got to continue to do a better job of that. And that's why this facility is right here in the urban core. I mean, we want to attract, the African-American kid to this game. And we want them to love playing baseball. In Asia, baseball is a huge deal, as we know. It's the number one sport in Japan and in South Korea and Taiwan. And, I mean, they love to play. And so I want to see an influx of the Asian player come into play in the United States as well. I mean, so that's something that you bring up is an interesting point. But, again, the player, Mike Trout, back to, the original question. I mean, Mike Trout is an amazing person. He's a great kid. I mean, he exemplifies the good old American kid, truthfully. And he loves people. He's always engaging. I watch him, when they come to our ballpark. We get a chance to compete against him, obviously in the playoffs. And he's always, having fun on the field. You always see him handling things with respect and integrity, the way he does interviews. I mean, I think he represents our game so well. And I would love for my son to try to model who he is as a person after Mike Trout.
Right now we're talking to Dayton Moore for a couple more minutes. Dayton, I've got two trade deadline questions. As we all know, Manny Machado was traded from the Orioles to the Dodgers. A lot of people are putting two and two together and talking about how that now opens up the market maybe a little bit more for Mike Moustakas. How it's a tiering system. Machado goes and then the rest of the players fall in line. How true is that, that now Manny Machado got traded, Moose is not going to be too far behind to follow?
Well, I think that's certainly a valid point. You know, I won't talk specifically about Mike Moustakas, but I think when a player like Manny Machado, who's obviously on the trade market, and a lot of people are inquiring about him and trying to put their best foot forward to attain that player, and then when he's gone, and then they go down the line and they look to acquire a different type of player or a similar type player. And so, Mike Moustakas is having a very good year for us. And certainly there's interest in him. And but we'll see where that goes. I mean, that doesn't mean just because there's interest in him, that doesn't mean we will necessarily move him. We have to evaluate each and every opportunity and put it in perspective on how it helps our team now and how it helps it, for the future. But we'll see how that unfolds.
How much of your day right now is either maybe calling a team and saying, hey, we really like this minor league part, we'd be willing to give you player X for these guys in the minors? How much of it is random team, I don't want to throw a team out there, calling about, we really like a player on your team, we think he can help get us over the hump?
Usually it's the other. I mean, the team would call you and inquire about the player. I mean, I've been doing this for 12 years now. I've never, ever called another team and said, are you interested in our player? They know that the proper procedure is if you have interest in another team's player, you call and you inquire about it. Now, I've called countless teams and asked about a certain player that we're trying to acquire that we think helps finish off our 25-man roster to help it make it competitive. And that's the situation that we've been in, the last 6 years or so. I mean, we've been in the market of trying to acquire major league talent to help solidify our 25-man roster to put us in a more competitive situation to match up to win in the playoffs and hopefully win a World Series. I mean, this time last year, I was thinking about it the other day. I mean, we had, I believe, a game-and-a-half lead in the wild card or so towards the trade deadline, and then we were a half game behind the Cleveland Indians, and we acquired Maurer and Buckner, two guys that were performing well in the Padres bullpen, and we go into Boston, we win two out of three, and then we acquire Melky Cabrera, and we really felt we were in good shape for the last 2 months, and it just didn't work out, and sometimes that happens in baseball, but we've always been on the other end where we're trying to acquire major league players to help our major league team.
Dayton, last question here. I don't want to call any player untouchable because if, the Yankees call and they were willing to give you Aaron Judge for Salvador Perez, that's certainly something you would think about if that was a trade they were willing to make. But is there a group of players that you maybe go into it saying, we don't want to trade these guys? Because I saw someone say this, Clint Scholes on Twitter, that Whit Merrifield right now, he is as good as Ben Zobrist when you traded for him back in 2015. That seems like somebody that is part of rebuilding this thing, that when this thing gets back together, whether it's next year or down the line, he's going to be one of the players that help you get back to the playoffs and win a World Series. Do you have maybe players, and I expect you to tell us who they are, but just we don't want to trade these guys because we want them to be here whenever we get back to the province?
I would be very candid with you. I mean, Whit Merrifield's one of those guys. I mean, no player's untouchable. I mean, you always have to stay open-minded because, again, somebody could just come up with a proposal that just makes really just great sense, and you just have to move forward with it for the betterment of the organization. But, players that you see on our team that fit within our financial structure and you feel like they still have really good years ahead of them, they're in the prime of their career, those aren't players that we're going to be quick to part with.
That is the Royals general manager, Dayton Moore, gracious with his time to join us at the Urban Youth Academy. Enjoy your event. We're happy to be in it. We play at 6.
We got a doubleheader tonight, Dayton.
All right, that's good.
We are guaranteeing victory in this wiffle ball tournament.
There's no doubt in my mind. No doubt.
We don't know who we're facing the pitcher, though, either. So, I mean, I think it's tough to guarantee. We might be facing a tough lefty.
I don't think
out
it
there.
Matters. I feel really good about
our
chances.
I appreciate you guys being here. It means a lot.
You bet.
Very special thanks to Royals general manager, Dayton Moore. Coming up on the other side, we'll give you a chance to win $1,000 at our national cash contest. It's the drive. I apologize for getting us back a little bit late, but hopefully you can forgive us because we did just have the general manager of your Kansas City Royals on the show, Dayton Moore. We'll get to something he said that I thought was very, very interesting. We'll get to that momentarily. But it's your chance to win $1,000. It's $1,000 on the 30s. Text the word parent, P-A-R-E-N-T, parent, P-A-R-E-N-T, to 72881. That's parent. And you can be the $1,000 cash winner in the National Cash Contest. 610 Sports Radio is the only sports radio station in Kansas City giving you a chance to win up to $12,000 each weekday. All you got to do is listen in on the 30s from 7A to 7P. Your next chance to win is coming up in 1 hour at 4:30, and I promise we'll do a better job of being on time. Complete rules and listings over at 610sports.com. One more time for those of you hard of hearing in the back.
What?
Parent, P-A-R-E-N-T, parent, P-A-R-E-N-T, to 72881. Speck, if you can hit it, this is what Dayton Moore just told us as he sat down with us live in studio.
I would be very candid with you. I mean, Whit Merrifield's one of those guys. I mean, no player's untouchable. You always have to stay open-minded because, again, somebody could just come up with a proposal that just makes really just great sense, and you just have to move forward with it for the betterment of the organization. But, you know, players that you see on our team that fit within our financial structure and you feel like they still have really good years ahead of them, they're in the prime of their career, those aren't players that we're going to be quick to part with.
The Royals are at a very interesting crossroads as an organization when it comes to rebuilding and what you need to do. Like the Padres, for example. The Padres just give Eric Hosmer over $100 million. They signed Brad Hand in January. Padres think they're going to be good. They then trade their closer, who they just signed in January this year, for a prospect. The Royals are in a very interesting place right now with what they're trying to do. I am a firm believer of, if you're Dayton Moore, you got to sit there and you got to look at guys you think are part of the problem and guys you think are part of the solution. And problem necessarily is, who are the guys that we don't think are going to help us when we're going to really be good in 2020, 2021, yeah. We got a chance to compete. Whit Merrifield is one of the players that is part of the solution here. Again, I don't think that he is untradeable in the context of, if you got offered some once-in-a-generational kind of deal, you trade him. But let's be realistic here. That's not happening with Whit Merrifield. Then he would be on my untradeable list with air quotes. I'm not trading Whit Merrifield. I'm not trading Salvador Perez. When this team is good and I think they have a chance to make the playoffs in two seasons in 2020, he's going to be, along with Salvador Perez, they're going to be part of the solution and part of the guys we are talking about who are pushing the Royals forward. Those aren't guys I'd be willing to part with, and listening to Dayton Moore, he feels the exact same way.
Yeah, and he talked a number of times about the size of the market in Kansas City and the fact that the Royals are the first small market team in the modern era to win a World Series. They went to back-to-back World Series, we all know. And the reason I bring that up is because of Whit Merrifield. He's 29 years old. He's essentially making the league minimum. He's not even eligible for arbitration until 2020. So you have an affordable player that's really good, that the fans really like, that can play multiple positions, and it doesn't cost you much. I mean, Whit's not even going to be a free agent because he was such a late bloomer until 2023. You know, so you've got a guy that with some ability that you can bounce around the field in a number of different positions. You can bat him lead off. You can move him down in the order. You can do all these different things. That has tremendous value. Now, it's going to have a lot of value to other teams as well, but for the Royals and the financial situation that they're faced with in a small market, he's a perfect fit for them.
I think you have to make a list, too, if you're Dayton Moore. A lot of lists being made. Who are guys that are outperforming their contract? Who are guys that we think are playing to the level
and
you're Witt's
at the top of that.
And guys who you think are underperforming their deal. Like, Alex Gordon has turned things around this season, but we would agree over the totality of his deal, he has underperformed on the money that the Royals gave him. Mm-hmm. Ian Kennedy, he has underperformed on the money that the Royals gave him. If you talk about a guy that you were getting the most bang for your buck for, man, Whit Merrifield might not just be tops on the Royals. He might be in the top 10 in Major League Baseball when you think about what his employer is paying him and the production you get on the field every single day. Those are contracts that you want. You want guys that are making $500,000, $1.2 million that are giving you $8 million, $9 million, $10 million per kind of production. I'll say it again. Whit Merrifield right now is as good as Ben Zobrist was when the Royals traded for him in 2015. And think about it. I mean, a lot of Royals fans, myself included, really wanted them to sign 34-year-old Ben Zobrist to a four-year deal. You got that same player right now in a four-year deal who's 5 years younger than that player was. Man, Whit Merrifield needs to be here throughout the duration of this contract. I'm keeping the value you have with Whit Merrifield. He's going to be able to be a guy that can play multiple positions, a guy that can continue to hit for power, and a guy that can hit for 280-plus and
not
get
to
on
mention,
base.
Yeah, well, and he led the league in stolen bases last year, too, so the guy can run a little bit.
That's a guy you got to keep on your contract.
Yeah,
your team.
Absolutely. I mean, Karen, you said top 10 in baseball. We'd have to go back and look this up, which would take some time. We could do it. Maybe we can get it for you tomorrow. But I wouldn't be surprised in terms of value for what he makes. He makes $569,000 this year. I mean, that's probably the best deal in all of baseball. I think another one of those guys, too, that the Royals, I thought, were getting a really pretty good deal for what they're paying him was Jorge Soler before he got hurt. Guy makes $4 million a year, which in baseball terms isn't very much. And he was having a heck of a year before he got hurt. So, yeah, I mean, those are the guys that the Royals are going to have to build around. You know, when you've got Moose and Haas and those guys, you know, on their rookie deals and aren't arbitration eligible and you control them for 6 years and you make that run, that's when you win. It sounded like to me, though, when he was in here, C-Dot, is that they feel like they can sustain success, you know, for a 10 to 15-year period, and that's kind of what they're going for instead of just one window of 4 or 5 years or so.
Text line 69306, Royals playoffs 2020. Are you drunk? 2020 would be the soonest it could happen. I don't know why you guys always underestimate when teams can come back and do things. Let's take a team like the Atlanta Braves. The Atlanta Braves last year won 72 games. The Atlanta Braves, a couple of seasons ago, were one of the worst teams in Major League Baseball, and they turned things around, and now they're one of the better teams in Major League Baseball. I mean, it doesn't take as long for them to be competitive as maybe people anticipate.
Look at the Twins last year.
A perfect example that if you trust and believe in Dayton Moore, I think 2020 is the earliest you can do it because you start getting some contracts off the book. You can start to do something with Ian Kennedy. You'll be out of the Alex Gordon contract. Then you can really start to do some stuff by 2020. I'm not guaranteeing they'll be in the playoffs, but that's the timeline I'm holding the Royals to. By 2020, the Royals should be a competitive baseball team and a team that should be competing for the wild card. I don't think that's unrealistic, man. 2020 is shooting the Royals a lot of bail and a lot of leeway here. The Royals can be a competitive baseball team in the next 2 years when you look at how easier it is to be competitive now with that second wild card, how teams can talk themselves into being competitive. If you're 3 games under 500, but you're 4 games back of the wild card spot, you can talk yourself into having a chance. Man, the Royals can be competitive a lot faster than people are giving them credit for.
The Minnesota Twins lost 103 games in 2016. They went to the playoffs last year and got the wild card, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so it can be done. I mean, the Detroit Tigers, I covered that team, and they were a 100-loss team, you know, for a bunch of years. And then they go to the World Series in 2006. They can get this thing turned around, you know, and the other part of that, too, is they've done it before. They started from essentially scratch when Dayton and those guys got here. They had no support, nothing in Latin America. They built that thing up. They started from scratch. At least right now, you're starting with all your pieces in place. You've got your academies. You've got your minor. You've got all this other stuff. The minor leagues needs to be built up in terms of prospects. I get part of that. But the framework is already in place. The Royals didn't have that when Dayton and these guys took over, 10 years ago?
Coming up next, we continue our Chiefs questions as we get you ready for training camp. We do that next, and one of my favorite bits that we do. We'll do that all coming up next on The Drive. Back in on The Drive, we'll get into our Chiefs question momentarily. We'll also continue our starting nine as we were playing classic innings from the Royals' run in 2014 and 2015. Coming up in 15 minutes or so, we will replay the 2015 ALCS Game 6, top of the ninth inning, as the Royals took on the Toronto Blue Jays. We'll get to that coming up in just a bit. But we got a little bit of breaking news out of the NBA. Oklahoma City has agreed to trade Carmelo Anthony and a protected 2022 pick. Oh, we're trading 2022 picks in the NBA to the Atlanta Hawks for Dennis Schroeder and Mike Muscala. Carmelo Anthony will be waived. He will join the team of his choice. We believe that team to be the Houston Rockets. Carmelo Anthony will be an Atlanta Hawk for like 37 seconds.
And then he's cut? He's done?
And then he's done, and then he's probably heading to Houston.
Okay, good. How old is Carmelo now?
Came out in 03, so he's a freshman in college then, 34,
okay.
I guess.
What's he got left? 2-3?
Yeah, 2-3 years most, tops.
All right. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, Melo's a guy that's never really won much, right? I mean, he's just a really talented ball player. I mean, he hadn't won a whole lot, right?
No, he has not won a whole lot.
Yeah, all right. Well, we'll see.
Coming up in just a bit, we will get to our key inning and our starting nine. But, Spec, let's hit the music.
We're doing our Chiefs question of the week. One question each day before the start of training camp a week from today in St. Joe. And today, talking about this guy.
He takes the snap, throws the right side slant. Sammy Watkins right in front of his face mask makes the catch. It's another goal line score for Sammy Watkins. His eighth touchdown of the season. And the Rams take the lead 19-13 with 6:40 to go in the third.
Given the load of talent on the offensive side of the ball with Kareem Hunt, Travis Kelce, and Tyreek Hill, Sammy Watkins probably comes in fourth. What is a realistic expectation for the new Chiefs wide receiver from free agency?
Am I wrong in thinking this? And the text line will probably say I'm wrong because the only people we can compare the Chiefs to are future NFL Hall of Famers. Am I wrong for thinking that I think the Chiefs have the chance of being the better version of the Raiders duo at wide receiver? Amari Cooper and Michael Crabtree. Michael Crabtree 2 seasons ago, not last year when he got beat up, but 89 catches, 1,000 yards, 8 touchdown passes for Michael Crabtree 2 seasons ago when Derek Carr was really, really good. Man, my expectation if you're Michael Crabtree, or excuse me, if you're Sammy Watkins, you're getting paid $14 million to be the second wide receiver for a team. Maybe a number one, we'll see what happens. We have the catches break down. Man, I got to see you have at least 900 yards and 7 touchdowns. $14 million this season. You can't have a disappointing season. Last year, you could blame the disappointing numbers on Jared Goff. That can't be the case this year. I'm looking for 2016 Michael Crabtree for Sammy Watkins. Around 90 catches, 1,000 yards, 8 touchdowns, I think is a fair thing to hold Sammy Watkins to.
I think Sammy Watkins is going to have the best year of his career in Kansas City. I think he's going to have the best year of his career. His best year right now is 1,047 yards, 9 touchdowns, and that was in 2015 with Buffalo. We talked about this earlier in the week. The quarterbacks that Sammy Watkins has played with over the course of his career is not all that outstanding. You got E.J. Manuel, Matt Castle, Tyrod Taylor, dudes like that. All right, so Sammy Watkins hadn't exactly had some great quarterbacks for him to throw the, or to catch the football from. Now, he did have Jared Goff last year. Let me ask this question to you. Who scares you more out of the Chiefs' weapons? Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, Sammy Watkins? Because to me, Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce scare me more than Sammy Watkins, which means Kelce and Hill are going to get a hell of a lot of attention, and Sammy Watkins is going to have his chances. I'm saying 1,000 yards and 10 touchdowns and the best year of his career for Sammy Watkins.
I think it's a little bit slanted in the question you just posed just because I know what Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce look like in this offense. I don't know what Sammy Watkins. Like, if we're talking of weapons provided to the quarterback, this is the best offense the Chiefs have had since 2003. Yeah. When they had Tony Gonzalez and they had Priest Holmes and those dynamic Chiefs offenses, man, there is no shortage of dynamic skill positions for the Chiefs. You've got the guy that led the NFL in rushing. You've got a arguably top 10, top 15 wide receiver in Tyreek Hill. Some people think Sammy Watkins is better than Tyreek Hill. Yeah. I would make that point, but some people think that. And you've got arguably the best, I think the second best tight end in the NFL. Man, no shortage of weapons. If you pay your tight end the way you're paying him, you need production. If you're paying your wide receiver the way you're paying him in Watkins, you need production. He needs to have at least 900 yards this year.
I mean, you got to put 2 guys on Tyreek and potentially 2 on Kelce. Who's got Watkins? I mean, that's kind of what I'm basing it on. You know, I mean, Tyreek Hill can bust one anytime because nobody can catch him. Travis Kelce is a matchup nightmare for as fast as he is and as big as he is. I think that's why Sammy Watkins is going to be freed up to have a really, really big year.
And that concludes our questions for the day. You know, anytime we talk about Sammy Watkins, that can only mean one thing. This is from Sammy Watkins' Twitter account. Be conscious of symbolism of power and the real true power, which is eternal life forever.
Isn't that a little redundant? Eternal life forever?
Be conscious of symbolism of power and the real true power, which is eternal life forever.
Yeah, eternal is forever, right?
At Sammy Watkins on Twitter.
Okay. We got some more.
Spec, we got more. Power is unification, operating as one body of people, mentally, physically, soulfully, and collectively. It should never be about possessions. That comes and goes. Seek law and order, and everything should come to you because you know how to handle it and the energies that come with it. You know what we need to do. in training camp at St. Joe, we need to hand out, every day we're there, a Sammy Watkins book. Like, you need to be able to sit down at your coffee table when you're enjoying a nice cup of coffee. Instead of reading the morning paper, you need to be able to read all of Sammy Watkins' tweets, courtesy of 610. I'm going to put that together.
All right.
I'm going to put together a binder, like 100 books. We're just going to hand out Sammy Watkins' tweets at training camp. Come get you a Sammy Watkins book.
I'd like to read Sammy's tweets to Sammy at training camp and have him, and have him tell us what they mean. That's what I want.
Spec. Don't get stuck in the matrix. It's more life outside the circle.
Then there's a hashtag amen.
Amen. I think it's amen.
I think you meant amen, don't you? Or
no, I think it's a type of religion.
Oh, it is?
Amen.
Oh, my bad. Yeah.
Oh, my. Sammy Watkins.
I don't want to get stuck in the matrix either.
Sammy Watkins might be my favorite person in the world.
Yeah.
Spec, we've got one more. Everything in this third dimension is an illusion. Dot, dot. It is all fake. Dot, dot, dot. I'll keep saying this every time we talk about Sammy Watkins and read his tweets. If you were failing NFL drug tests, you were not talking to the right person. Anybody that types in on the internet, everything is a third dimension, is an illusion, it's all fake, is high. Like, every single person that says this is high. Every single person who has said, don't get stuck in the matrix, it's more life outside the circle, is a marijuana user. Yeah. If you fail the NFL marijuana test, you need to go to Sammy Watkins immediately and find out how he's beating these tests. Because there's no doubt in my mind Sammy Watkins smoked weed. Doubt in my mind.
You think he's got the original Wizinator? I mean, something like that?
I think he might be a principal investor in the Wizinator.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just telling you, there's no chance. There's a 0% chance Sammy Watkins doesn't get high.
Yeah.
A 0%, 100% he smokes marijuana.
Yeah.
So if you fail an NFL drug test, you're a dummy. You need to listen to Sammy Watkins because he's passing every single one of them. Coming up, we're going to continue our starting nine as the week concludes itself. Next, we will replay the top of the ninth inning in the 2015 ALCS Game 6. As the Royals took on the Blue Jays. All that coming up is the Drive.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.